Stay up to date on the green and gold all season. The Green and Gold Fix podcast is brought to you by Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. Luxury stay, elite play, unwind in sophisticated comfort. Win big, dine, and experience the events in Milwaukee.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in, but when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do.
It is time for Brian Blood.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey, do you like surprises?
It depends. Depends on what the surprise is. Some good surprises, some bad surprises.
That's true.
I mean, it all depends on the surprise.
So I surprised you. We did a charity event for CASA of Brown County earlier in the week, and you and Corey Lindsley were great and gracious with your time. But I surprised you by including James Campen in the event, which you did not know was going to happen. And so I was curious, overall, when it comes to a good surprise, do you enjoy a good surprise, or would you rather know something is coming? Because it would appear that if you are on the Tauscher family calendar, most things that are going on come as a surprise to you if you're not Tausch because of his techniques that he uses.
No, like, that's a good surprise. So, like, I'm all for, like, a good surprise not knowing. Like, that was really good. That was good to see Campy. So, if it's something that's good, positive, and you don't know about it, and it happens, and it's good, it's exciting, then I'm all for it. But if it catches you off guard, and you're a little like, oh, well, I got to go do what, or this is happening, or I got to go meet who or talk to who, and then it's a little unsettling, a little unnerving. So I don't know what Tausch has going on his schedule that maybe is a bad surprise.
Neither does Sarah Washington.
I don't know what that surprise is, but the Campy surprise was a great surprise. That was fantastic to see him and talk to him. So that was really well done, Jason. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I was just putting that out there to be praised.
Who do you think Campy's favorite player was? O-lineman.
Ooh, great question.
Well,
I know the answer to this, so I'll be curious if Brian agrees with me.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to go right off the top of my head, I would say City. If I had to, and then I think a close second would probably be Dave if I had to go like a close second. But I wasn't there in my time with, like, when you guys were there with him, right? Like, so, like, I didn't get to see the interaction with him with you guys, you know, like,
yeah, no, it wasn't anybody from our generation. He liked your guys' group better. There's no doubt. We've had many discussions over a Coors Light or two, but the correct answer, well, the David Bakhtiari piece to that might trump City.
Yeah.
And obviously City and how that all finished up, I don't know all the details on that. It comes down to Dave and City. And I would have said City, but D-Bach, the all pros and everything, I might end up going, hey, Jason, text Campy because he won't tell Blue and I.
Okay.
Just text Campy and then give us a report back when.
Well, he's.
He'll say, oh, you know, I love all you guys.
That's exactly what I said.
But it was City or Deepak.
He's at the scouting combine because he's a scout now, you know. And he was breaking down tape of centers when we had him in. But I learned something interesting from our little surprise visit and then our subsequent conversation with Blue and Corey that when Corey was drafted in 2014. They told him, what number do you want? And he said, I don't care, whatever. And Campy gave him 63, which was Campy's number. And the guys just killed him for it day after day after day for wearing Campy's number and being the teacher's pet. Right, Brian?
Oh, little baby 63. Campy's little 63. right off the bat.
I mean, it was
classic, dude. Right when we saw him the first, because, you know, you don't know anything about the rookies when they come in. And we saw 63 walk out on the field and he put his hand on the ball. We were like, oh, look, how predictable is this? And we're like, this is too classic. perfect. You know, Campy's little 63 walking out on the field. How nice. Like, this is just great.
And Campy signing up to be quarterback. They can do the quarterback center exchange, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's just unbelievable. Perfect.
Blue, did you get a choice? Did they give you an opportunity to pick what number you wanted?
No, absolutely not. No, I didn't get a choice.
Yeah,
no choice.
I was happy. I was in the, you know, between 1 and 99. You know, back at Wisconsin, I started off at 140. And here, I always get a kick out of it. It's like, which guys get a chance to pick what number? I would have thought a first-round pick you'd get to choose. They just said, here's 75, go with it.
Yeah, what they told me originally was like, they told me on the phone, they said, you're not getting 79A because Pickett has it, so don't even worry about that. And two, Mandrich was 79, so you're not getting that either. So no matter what, you weren't going to get 79. So you're going to be 75, and that's that. I'm like, okay, sounds good. And that was
that. So they didn't want you having Tony Mandrich's old number because that would have led to the Wildes to compare you to Tony Mandrich, and that was not going to be good for your career. Is that the essence of what you're saying?
I thought Tony Mandrich was 77, though.
I thought he was 79.
Yeah, I don't think he was 79.
No, Will Whitaker was 79.
No, maybe I was wrong then.
Okay.
Maybe
Barry Stokes was 79.
Maybe someone misspoke to me then.
You got bad information from them, yeah.
Maybe they said you didn't want – maybe this is what happened. 79 was Pick's number. Then maybe you wanted 77, and they said you can't take Mandrich's number because
– Nope, I did not ask for a number. I did not
You were 79 at Iowa, though, right?
Yeah, I did not ask for a number at all. I did not request anything. I went into it going – they didn't even ask me if I wanted a number. And then I did not.
That's why we all love Blue as a rookie. And he wasn't one of these pampered first rounders.
I swear they said he was, but I guess I'm wrong. Someone told me you're not getting it because he had that. Maybe I'm thinking of a different name, but I swear it was that. But again, that was a long time ago. Maybe the memory's going.
Verba was 78.
77 was taken.
Verbs.
77 was also taken. Cullen Jenkins had 77 when you arrived. So,
it might have been someone else. I don't know.
You're number one
with
us.
Hey, Blue, what is the? We just had a discussion before you jumped on.
Let's talk about number 23.
I think we all just assume Jair's not coming back. It's going to be good for him to do it. But my question is, how robust of a market is there going to be for a guy that has not been able to stay healthy? He's obviously had some other stuff that has happened, whether it's the captaincy out in Carolina. But when he's played, he's been a good player. Where do you think, what do you think his market's going to be? Nobody's going to break the bank to bring Jair in, will they?
Yeah, that's the tough part about kind of predicting what it's going to be, because you know if you get him healthy, he's probably going to play well, right? And he's able to stay healthy, he's going to play well. But it's been the the history of the last few years, it's just he hasn't been able to stay healthy and be available, and that's the tough part of predicting what Jair you're going to get, and that's what scares teams the most, right? If you put a lot of money into a corner, and normally when you put a lot of money into a cornerback position, which normally you rely on those guys to take care of a side of a field, and they're not available much. I mean, that hurts the defense a ton. I mean, we've talked about it a bunch throughout the season, how big of a miss Jair is when he's not on the field. And that scares teams off. And then, the other stuff that happens off the field, right? The captaincy stuff and maybe stuff that was going around inside the locker room. I don't know about in the locker room, so to speak. I think whatever, what or what not happened in the locker room. I think guys were fine with him in the locker room. I don't think that was an issue. Maybe with him in the staff or whatever it may be. I don't know. I don't know if that's as much of an issue. I guess if people want to talk about that, I think it's more of the availability thing. I think that's the biggest thing. I think that in the NFL, we always talk about in the O-line room when the BS outweighs the performance, right? I think that's normally the thing, and normally, and that's normally what I always go off, right? And if Jair's not available enough, that's where teams start to get concerned, right? And that's kind of where I think he's going to find difficulty within the market initially. And I heard you guys earlier, I jumped on earlier, and you were talking about incentive-based contracts. And I think that's probably where he's going to find a lot of his offers early on. I think is going to be heavily incentivized contracts, which he may not like that. A lot of players don't, but sometimes you're going to have to gamble on yourself when you've gone through rough patches like this as a player from an injury standpoint. You're going to have to take a gamble on yourself and gamble on your health, and it may not be the most glamorous contract that you've ever signed, but you know what? That's the position you're in. And whether that's with Green Bay, like you guys kind of talked about, or whether that's with another team, that's kind of the position you're in, and you just have to bet on yourself and do as much as you possibly can this offseason to ready your body to stay healthy for 17, 18 games or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned about the O-line room and when the BS outweighs the performance is really interesting. Look, whether it's fair or not, I think there are people in that building that question his desire to play. I'm not saying that they should. I'm just saying that they do. And I think that is a problem for a player, right? You don't ever want them to feel that way about you. And it got heavy, whether it was fair or not, to David. It happened to him too, right? I mean, you could just feel Matt LaFleur's exasperation and frustration during Dave's final year. You could just feel it. And, and so you could feel it again with Jair. And look, I don't think he will have to settle for a completely incentive-laden deal, because I think a team that doesn't have the history with him that the Packers do, that might be desperate for corner help, will be willing to pay him and say it'll be different here. That doesn't mean it will be different. But I think they'll be, like, if I'm Carolina, and that's his hometown where he wanted to be a captain when Matt LaFleur forgot about it.
Carolina.
And I don't care necessarily about, and if I'm him and I want to get paid some more, because I signed a four-year, $84 million deal and I'm not going to get to the final 2 years of it, I'm going to go somewhere that's going to pay me. And somebody's going to pay me. I don't think he's going to have to settle for heavy incentives, because he's only 28 years old, and someone will say he needs a change of scenery, and he'll be fine with us.
More of his money will be tied up in incentives than he gets outside of it. Nobody said he's only going to get incentives. I'm saying the vast majority of the money he will make will be incentive-based on any contract that he signs.
You ready
to make
see.
That wager, old boy?
Well, I'm not much of a wagerer. What are we wagering?
I don't know. What do you want to wager?
I don't know. This was your idea.
Tell me. No, we can go like, we can't do it over air. But my point is, you're
and
kinda,
we'll put it on your
you're
calendar.
You're kind of just saying, well,
I'm giving my
that's
opinion,
not how this is going to go.
Which I don't normally do.
No, I understand. I think it's wrong. I think everybody that looks
opinion.
At this says that Jair has this, but we have seen the last 2 years he has not been able to be out on the field. So if you're on the field, we're going to pay you.
Well,
if you're not, we're not.
To Brian's point, desperation also factors into how much BS you're willing to put up with. And if your corners suck and you see a distressed asset as another team and you have a lot of cap room where you don't really care if you overpay them a little bit because you think the reward is worth the risk, I think he's going to find other employment. Also, he will be a player who is cut, theoretically, or traded. But if the Packers just cut him, that also means that he doesn't factor into the compensatory pick equation. So now you get a two-time second-team All-Pro, a former first-round pick. You don't have to worry about compensatory picks. You don't have to trade for him if he gets released. Like, here's my other question. If you're an NFL team right now and you're looking at where he's at, are you sitting there going, kind of like I'm guessing teams are doing with Davante Adams, with a $35.64 million cap hit for next year and base salary for next year? Are you sitting there going, the Jets aren't keeping him. They'll eventually have to cut him. So I'm not going to give up something to try and get him. He's going to be a free agent soon. And are you looking at Jair the same way, saying there's no way Goody's going to put up with this crap after the last 2 years? If I'm another GM, that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, you heard the way the Jets talked about it in their presser. He's on the team right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and if I'm Devontae, right? I mean, well, I guess we could hit on that just for a second. Like, Devontae's not going to work out a number for them. Why would he work out a number for
right.
them? Right? Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, why would he work out a deal for them? So, like, in that case, like, them saying he's on the team for now, they're trying to move him. No one's going to make that deal for, you know, with that cap number and the picks that they'll have to give, you know. So he'll eventually, obviously, they'll release Devontae. And I can see that being the same case for this, right? Like, I mean, teams aren't going to budge on it. They know eventually he probably will be released, unless, obviously, Jair works out a deal. But I think we go back to, like, how this all started. You talked about, like, people question Jair's desire. But, like, I think there's also part of this, too, with the player. Like, is he happy in Green Bay? Was he happy from the way how all this started and how everything has been handled from his standpoint and how his injuries have been talked about and how everything, like, has he been happy the last 3 years? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I can't speak for him. I don't
doesn't
think anyone
look like
really
it.
Has. Yeah, it doesn't look like he's been a happy guy in Green Bay. I don't know that for a fact. But there's something to be said about when guys are in a good headspace, they're happy where they're at. I'm not saying it keeps guys healthy, but it sure as heck, it plays a factor in how guys perform and how they go out there and do their business, right? Like, and I truly believe that. Like, you know, when guys feel like they're wanted and they belong and they're in a good mental space, they go out and perform a certain way. I mean, it's not some psychology thing. It's just, guys are human, you know, football players are human beings. When you feel a certain way, you go out and perform. And maybe he wasn't feeling that way in Green Bay the last few years, and that contributes to a lot of things. I'm not saying, like, you know, that was the reason why he was injured or this or that, but there's certain factors that play into everything. I'm with you guys. Like, he probably will not be back. Yes, that's probably the outlier here. But how Goody does it and how they go about doing it, I'm assuming that'll be done within the next, what, Jason, month?
Yeah, I mean, they don't want him on their roster when the new league year starts on March 12th.
Okay. Yeah, but again, so fairly soon then, yeah.
Right, and my point to Tausch was that he got the question yesterday point blank about, is Jair going to be on this team in 2025? And the answer was, we'll see. We're working through that. And if you truly want him on the team, but you don't know if he'll be on the team, to me the answer is, well, we want him on this team, but we got to work through some stuff first. He had the opportunity to say that, and Goody didn't. And sometimes it's about what they don't say, and then it's about their actions. And what they didn't say was, hey, we want him back, but we got to work through some stuff to make that happen. That's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, do you want Aaron Jones back? Absolutely. Oh, Aaron Jones is back until he's not. That's all I'm saying.
I think we learned. I think he probably learned a lesson from that too, I would imagine, last year as well. I'm not saying that, you know, sometimes everyone makes mistakes with what's presented, how they say things at times. And obviously there was a lot of emotion tied in with the Aaron Jones thing, right? I mean, a beloved member of the team and everything like that. I mean, how much he contributed. And obviously, you know, people make mistakes with what they say at times. And obviously I think Goody at that point in time, how he said that and what he said and then how it panned out, that was obviously a mistake how that came across, right? And people are holding him to it and people held him to it. And now, like, you know, when he says things, you know, like he says this about Jair, people are going to reference that back and be like, well, you said this about Aaron Jones. So, like, how can we believe what, you know? So, like, I think that their lessons have probably been learned from what happened last year and how he addresses things going forward this year. But I get what you're saying. I just think he's probably playing this, you know, how we see him going forward from now on, addressing these issues is probably how he's going to handle every player going forward addressing these issues. Because, I mean, I don't think he can do that again with how he did that guarantee of Aaron Jones, and then, well, he's not back, and that you know that's tough to handle if you do that multiple times.
Right. Just to be clear, the question that Goody was asked was, "Do you expect Aaron Jones to be on this team?" And he said, "Absolutely."
Yeah.
When asked if you expect Jair to be on this team in 25, there's a difference between saying absolutely and saying we want him back, but we got to work through some stuff. That's what the answer should have been about Aaron Jones. We want him back, but we got to work through some stuff because we're going to lowball the crap out of him on our offer, and then he's going to get pissed, and he's going to go play for the Vikings, is what happened.
Just so to put a bow on this. Just to put a bow on this and get, because I know Jesse's going to send a clock emoji here. The fact that we're so certain on Jair not being back. We, last year, Jason and I, we were not as on point with, we assumed because of those comments and because of the
absolutely is a big word.
Jason, if you'd let me, I want to bow this thing. We thought that that was a certainty, and it wasn't. So all I'm saying is, let's not get caught with our trousers down and say that it's absolutely that he's not coming back. I don't think he's coming back, but I thought Aaron Jones was going to be in the backfield last year. Yeah. He wasn't. We don't think Jair is going to be, and I don't know how robust that market's going to be. I think Jair might be looking at it. He loves the defensive coordinator. We know that. And all of a sudden, let's just not poo-poo and say, oh, he's definitely not coming back, even though I don't think he is. That's all. Absolutely.
Thank you for bowing that. That was absolutely fabulous. More with Brian Bulaga, even though the 10 o'clock hour should have already started. It's Wilde and Tausch.
Welcome to the 2025 NFL Draft on ESPN Radio.
The NFL Draft is now underway.
Live from historic Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
With the first pick.
Thursday, April 24th on ESPN Radio, ESPN, and on ABC.
You might not know I'm here in this big city we're in. But when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do.
Time for Tackle Talk with Brian Bulaga, our famous friend, and Tausch, too. So yesterday, Brian Gutekunst, Bulagakunst, spoke in Indianapolis, and among the topics he addressed, with more than the we'll see on Jair, among the topics was how this team scouts and views offensive linemen. I want you both to listen to what Goody had to say here. I don't think it's earth-shattering, but it is insightful into their mentality. Here's Goody in Indy.
We've always focused on versatility with our offensive linemen, whether it be because of injury or because we have players that leave. We feel really good about the flexibility of our guys to play multiple spots and try to get the best five on the field. So it's always impactful, but at the same time, I feel really good about our group right now.
How versatile were you two? I mean, Brian Bulaga has admitted publicly that he could not play guard.
Yeah. I can play left tackle and right tackle if that's versatile, I guess. I could do both of those, but I wasn't played anything else but tackle, man, that's for sure. I mean, so, like, I wasn't very versatile.
And Tausch, there were some who projected you as an NFL guard. You ended up being a right tackle, which you were at Wisconsin. You played some guard in pinches, but would you say that you were versatile?
Yes, I would, because I played.
Of course he would.
I played left tackle in the NFL. I played right tackle in the NFL. I played right guard in the NFL. So 3 out of 5? I think that would account for versatility. And I played some center to the chagrin of some quarterbacks in practice. I never could have played center in a game, just for the record.
Wait a minute.
That was not going to be good.
When did you play center in practice?
No,
who was the quarterback who was chagrined?
I wore a sweat jacket a lot when I practiced and long sleeves. And there was a former four-time MVP that didn't necessarily appreciate that. And he would only go gun, typically when I would go and take snaps with, you know, in pre-practice warm-ups.
He's a complicated fella.
So here's why this is interesting. Because when Elgton Jenkins went down, they put two big, tall, lanky tackle guys at left guard. Both of them inexperienced, both of them not primarily guards, both of them not good enough in a playoff game. So how exactly, and I defer to the two of you, how do you balance, we want guys that are versatile and can play all the positions with, but if they play out of position, they may stink. How do you weigh that?
Yeah. And Tausch may disagree with me, but I've always kind of been, I've always been a little, maybe I'm a little bit old school with my mentality on this, and maybe, you know, the newer thought of thinking with GMs and how they balance rosters and how they think of things is, I kind of like the mentality of having specialists within the offensive line room. Like tackles are tackles, right? Like you have tackles, they play tackle and that's what they do. Like you don't move these guys. Like that's like, they don't fit at guard. That's not what they're meant to do. They can't do that, but they are really good out there. Like, yeah, there's at times you can move a guard, and if he needed to play tackle for like a quarter, maybe he could do it with some help. But you're not going to put him out there for like a full game and expect him to do really, really well. Like it's just not, it's not a good fit, right? Like it's not something you want to do all the time. Like I'm not saying that, like this isn't like rocket science here, but like TJ would go out at times because of injury and would play at tackle. I mean, he was not comfortable out at tackle, but you put him at guard and it looks like a completely different player. Like it's just like guys are built for certain positions. Now there are certain, I mean, I guess I look around the NFL and there's not many guys that are just like masters at every position like Bruce Matthews was. Like it's just, that doesn't happen, right? Like that's why he is who he was, right? It just isn't that way. And we look at guys playing in the NFL today, who does do that? Nobody does. Guys are really, you know, built for certain positions. Yeah, the backup guys have to be able to be versatile. They have to be able to bounce in and out of positions and be able to do that. But within your starting five, right, like they got to be good at what they're going in there to do. Like your guards have to be good guards. Like your tackles have to be good tackles. Like if someone gets injured within the starting five, you're not thinking, hey, I'm taking my right tackle and putting him at guard, and then I'm going to take in a backup and put him at right tackle. Like that can't be the thought process. Like that's not the way to look at it. Like you got to think, all right, I'm leaving everyone alone, and then I'm going to bring in my backup guys that should be versatile enough to throw in there at left guard, and we got to be able to get away with it for the rest of the game. But to think we just have a bunch of tackle bodies now and we're going to throw them in there at guard like they did in the playoff game, like you can't get away with that because it's just not we saw how it worked. It can't work, and that's what they're going to have to address.
And Tausch, isn't this what makes Zach Tom and Elgton Jenkins special, is that they are different and they can do all that? Like getting through a game is one thing. If you lose a guy for, and I, how many times I hear Campy or offensive coordinators through the years or Big Mike say, well, the one thing you don't want to do is move everybody around and now you're weaker at multiple positions because you got multiple guys playing out of position. So I love this guy was a college left tackle. We project him as a guard, right? Because most colleges have their best offensive lineman at left tackle. But the idea of having a guy that, like, I don't, what is Jordan Morgan, for example? I don't know.
We don't know yet. I mean, that's the thing. We have no idea yet. I mean, that's, I think that's the mystery here, right? Like, that's the mystery piece within this whole thing, right? Like, and that's kind of, that's where we're, I mean, for me with this offensive line is kind of, and I told the Homer too, like, I feel good about the offensive line. He's the unknown with this whole thing because we didn't really get to see him much. So, like, if he comes into camp and he looks really good, I feel really good about the offensive line. I feel a lot better about it, whether he's competing at the left tackle position or the left guard position. I feel great about it. But, like, he's the one unknown about it. But, like, say in the playoff game, well, who knows what would have happened. But, like, say he's the guy that comes in at left guard. How does that game look? I'm not saying we win the game, but are we way more productive offensively to give the Eagles an even better game than what it was in the fourth quarter? Potentially. I don't know. But, like, that's kind of where I'm, you know, that you got to have guys that are functionally able to handle those things. Not just, like, we got tackles. We think tackles can play guard, but they can't. Like, it's not, if they would have put me in at guard in the playoff games, like, my rookie year, I would have gotten killed. I would have cost us games. Like, and I'm not even joking. Like, it's just the truth. Like, I would have cost us games because I am not meant to do that. Like, that,
and
that's
you were
a
great
idea.
Tackle, so it's not like you're a bad player.
Yeah, like, but I'm a liability in there. Like, and but that's just being dead honest. So, like, it's not for everyone. Like, not every position's not meant for everybody, and that's just the truth of it.
Well, and it's not only that. I mean, if you can train and figure it out, it is not – I think there's this misconception, and part of it is because Elton is so good, that he is one of those guys that you can just rotate down. He is a stud, and when he's healthy, he's as good as there is. He can do that. There's a reason you need those reps to work with the chemistry next to your right guard. That's when you start going next level. When you're bouncing guys around, playing guard and tackle could not be more different. It's not, oh, they're an O-lineman, they'll figure it out. Everything happens like that at guard. And you got strong, quick players. You can't sit back and let stuff happen. You got to go. Tackles, you got to have patience. There's different ways. There's more athleticism, whatever it might be. It is a whole different world. And to expect a young player who hasn't gotten a ton of reps to go in and block the Jalen Carters and these other dudes is setting them up for failure.
And so they failed.
It was unfortunate that Elton got hurt. I think the obvious thing and what I think Green Bay does a great job of is, all right, here's our swing tackle. Here's our interior guy. This is what we're doing. If something happens to our center, Elton goes here, and somebody else that has played inside, at least we'll give a fighting chance to get through the week, and then we reevaluate the following week. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And it's not as easy as just saying, well, Bulaga's a really good athlete. First-round pick. We right. got to find a spot for him. Well, he's a better tackle than he's a guard. That's the spot. Now, that doesn't mean Brian, if he's the sixth-best lineman or seventh-best, he might have to go in a game and just grind through and figure it out. But that's not in the best interest of everybody. So I love the way Goody attacks this. I think his evaluating talent, and I believe one of the key things, and Brian, I don't know what your 10-yard split was, but I think that is a big part of their evaluation on that. Because it's about getting in and out of your stance. It's about getting. It's not about, oh, I can run a 400. Nobody gives a rip. How fast can I get from point A to point B? And then you get the strength and all the other stuff that you look at on film. But I think they look heavy at that 10-yard split. And if your numbers aren't where they need to be, you're dropping on their board. And then we get them in, we train them, and we find out, all right, this guy's an athlete enough to do this. Now is he tough enough? Is he strong enough? Can he pass off twist? Is he laterally quick enough to snap it here and get back? Those are the things you're looking for interior, which is completely different than what you're looking for at tackle.
Yeah. 100%. I think 10-yard split, and when you look at when they do those O-line drills, when they get them on the – when they actually do the positional work, when they do the lateral work, how do they look laterally, right? Like, and I don't mean, like, the three-cone drill and all that, because that's a lot of training that goes into just to do a simple drill. I just mean the football work, the lateral football work. How do they look doing that? Like, that to me shows you a lot. Their coordination, how wide is their base and able to move laterally and change direction really quick and operate, you know, in those situations. And I think that shows Green Bay a lot. And they're able to evaluate that really well under the circumstances, because they've done it so well over the years. They've been able to find guys that do that really well in the, not just like, you know, I'm not even giving myself an example, but like guys from the later rounds, like yourself included, you know, Corey, Dave, Sitton, TJ, like all these guys that they've found in later rounds that have been able to do it very, very well for a long time, that have built amazing careers off of it. They found them in later rounds, based off not just film study and looking at the tape, but like those little, you know, measurables that maybe teams look over, and they do it really well. So like that's the thing I think Goody's learned from, obviously from being with Ted and how Ted's done it, and now he's doing it too. I think he's been able to find these guys like Zach Tom. How many people passed over Zach Tom? He didn't. So like that's the way I that's what I'm saying. That's the way I look at it. I think Sean Ryan's another example. I think he could turn into a really good guard. Like he got pushed last year, obviously got pushed out of his position early on. I think earned it back. I think he's going to continue to get better. So, like, I think Goody has the right mindset. I just always look at, like, I like versatility. I get it. It's a very good word in the offensive line room, but you got to have some specialists that do a job really well. Like, that is their job. That is where they are. That is where they stay, and they do it really well. And that's all I'm saying.
Well, Brian, you do this job really well, and the Packers only have 7 picks right now. Goody said he wants more, and I think that's because he needs to draft multiple offensive linemen, and he's got other holes to fill as well. Brian, I will talk to you tomorrow on the Homer Hour, and we'll talk to you next week here. Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.
That is the great Brian Bulaga.